Welcome to the Hoban Minute, a podcast that will shift your perspective on the business, politics, and culture of the hemp and marijuana industries. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye. It's 420 somewhere, so let's dive in. Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the Hoban Minute. I'm your host, Xavier Jaye, and I'm joined, as always, by intrepid world traveler, Bob Hoban.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I'm excited about our guest today.
Yes, we do have another guest, per usual. And today, the guest is Patrick McCartan, CEO and co-founder of Regenibus. How are you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing very well. Thanks very much for the invitation, and I'm delighted to be here.
It's our pleasure. We appreciate you joining us. And so before we jump into your background and, you know, what you do in the cannabis industry, why don't you tell us where you are calling into the show today from?
I'm calling in from San Francisco, or actually the Bay Area of San Francisco, but don't be distracted by the Irish accent. I'm not in Dublin, Ireland. It's California.
Well, yes, California now, the home of cannabis. But, you know, you did get your roots in Ireland, of course, and so that's a good segue to jump right into the background. What brought you to Regenibus, to the cannabis industry, and the ESG movement as a whole?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, actually. So before I moved to California, which was about 11 years ago, I was working in the corporate sustainability world, and I actually went back to do a master's in energy management and sustainability in Dublin City University. And I'd always felt, you know, Ireland is a great country, but I always felt that there was more deeper, more progressive thinking in Silicon Valley and in San Francisco. And given a lot of the sustainability world had come from San Francisco, I really wanted to be surrounded by that type of progressiveness and thinking. And thus, I moved over to California and San Francisco about 11 years now. And after I finished my master's, and I worked for an organization called Sustainable Brands, which was really the leading sustainability organization globally that was working with Fortune 500 companies and many different types of corporations and companies and thought leaders. It was very much aligned to my values too, because, you know, it's great to be profitable and leading businesses, but it's also great to actually have a positive impact in the world. And I think after the crash of 08, that really got me thinking about really what is the purpose of this, well, it is my purpose on this world and this planet and this short life that I have. And I wanted to leave a positive impact and also set a precedent for my future family, should we say. So, I moved over, worked with Sustainable Brands for a good few years. And again, working at the coalface of the sustainability movement with companies like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Amazon, J&J, all of the very, very big companies. And, you know, even back then, a decade ago, sustainability was a sideshow in companies like Unilever. They had small sustainability departments, very small budgets. It was not a key business and brand driver like it has become today. And that's really where I cut my teeth working with those type of organizations. And then obviously, you know, looking at solutions for companies from packaging to papers to fuels to foods, and looking at alternative sustainable options. I always had one eye on hemp as a real game changer, not just for all corporations, but for our world, really, because our world is really in a sticky situation, climate change and so forth. And I that was one of the reasons why I moved into the cannabis industry. Another reason was around health and wellness and giving alternative pain management to people with all different types of ailments, and seeing personal encounters of friends with kids with epilepsy and so forth. I knew that cannabis was a serious, medical cannabis was a serious solution, as opposed to other destructive opioids. And that was another big driver for me But then, of course, I uncovered the whole world of cannabis, and I started to learn about the different cannabinoids. That also then sort of reaffirmed my position and area of focus. So again, building long-term successful businesses, but with a real positive impact, not just environmentally, but socially.
All of those things are extremely present as it relates to the cannabis industry. When you think about the fact that the cannabis industry is not always the most environmentally friendly steward of an industry, in part because of the regulations that require childproof packaging on nearly every product that's sold, the labeling requirements, and of course, you know, coming from your energy management background, the energy use, the consumption of energy in cultivation facilities and extraction facilities and beyond. So this industry begs for it on one hand. So on one hand, it's on that end of the spectrum. On the other hand, it's, you mentioned hemp. I mean, hemp has such a promise for environmental sustainability and to solve so many of the Earth's problems with regard to creating biofuels and as an alternative to fossil fuels and to the environment and so many different levels, replacing plastic and the like. Talk a little bit, if you can, for a moment about when you selected this as your sort of entry point or your focus point, if you will, for the cannabis industry. How do you reconcile these two things that are seemingly diametrically opposed, the wastefulness associated with packaging and energy use, seemingly, and the fact that hemp can and likely will save the world?
Yeah, very interesting questions. And you know, I think we're struggling from the packaging, and because of the regulations, as you mentioned, Bob, it's a real issue. And you don't see this type of challenges in other industries like alcohol. It's a very simple process of packaging. But well, first of all, we need to educate those in governments around the world, which we're doing with all of the work that we're doing, but particularly what we're doing at the United Nations and the events that we're having there. Is really to helping them to understand the critical nature of industrial hemp and industrial cannabis, some others say, from a packaging and paper perspective, and that they need to put in the regulations all in every country so that farmers and so industries and markets can start to grow hemp and build products and so forth. There's great work happening in Paraguay, and very few people know about what's happening in Paraguay. Huge government support there, building an incredible economy with all based around hemp. And, you know, again, it's all going to come down to education so we can fast track the issues around the packaging. Packaging in the cannabis industry, obviously, it's been a real, real mess. And the regulations are what creates this mess because the types of plastics and child to the proof tampering and so forth, it really makes it difficult to break down all of these the packaging in cannabis products. So again, we need to, one, put the regulations in place to make the packaging process easier to recycle, number one, but also to replace all of the petrochemical plastics and traditional papers and packaging with hemp plastics, with hemp papers and so forth. And again, it's all going to come down to regulations and government supporting it. So, and that's all around education. So that's why I think is going to be critical. On the other hand, you know, when I moved into the industry, when I'd worked with all of these corporations, I had worked alongside my co-founder, Jeff Trotter, at the Genevis. And, you know, I got a real insight into the UN Sustainable Development Goals, of which there are 17 goals. And that's the blueprint for the sustainable future that we all want for ourselves and for our families and future generations. We want to leave this planet in a better way than we had received it or what we're doing right now. And, you know, when I was looking and analyzing the industry prior to when I moved into it, about 5-6 years ago now, I felt that the UN Sustainable Development Goal framework was the perfect North Star goal and framework for the cannabis industry globally and cannabis companies to really align to and to sort of commit their businesses too, like 97% of all other companies around the world that are not in the cannabis industry. They have some type of commitment to the UN SDGs. So I felt that that was the North Star goal. And we've been really singing from the sort of mountaintop around the UN SDG framework. And particularly, that was one of the cases that we had to make when we were in conversations with the UN. Look, we need to move this industry forward. We know it's a game changer for every country, economically, environmentally, and socially. And that the UN SDG framework is the 17 different pillars to align to for the industry.
Now, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, so let's ground this a little bit. I will say that in 2020, I was participating with a number of folks in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum, where we were discussing cannabis, generally speaking, hemp in particular, as it relates to the achievable sustainable development goals set forth by the United Nations and espoused by the World Economic Forum and so many other places. And then you've got this concept of ESG, environmental and social governance, which really has taken the world by storm in many ways and has implemented at the SEC level in the United States and beyond. So those tend to be the focus of Regenibus in many ways. So let's start with Regenibus. What is Regenibus and how does it build its business around these ESG principles and SDG principles in the cannabis industry?
Yes, absolutely. So myself and my co-founder, Jeff Trotter, as I mentioned, we've come from the corporate sustainability world. Jeff also was 10 years a partner at EY in Hong Kong and also worked at the UN. And we've been sort of working with, you know, around sustainability, around the ESG, which is a relatively new concept and structure for companies. It's only roughly around four to five years old. It's come from the CSR sustainability world. And when myself and Jeff came together to found Regenibus 2.5 years ago, we really wanted to bring sustainability and ESG and the UN Sustainable Development Goal frameworks into the industry. So Regenibus, we are an advisory organization. There's three parts to what we do. We advise around ESG and sustainability. We're in the process of building out a SaaS platform built on the SASB principles. We've actually adapted the SASB principles to add in new features around data collection, around diversity, equity, inclusiveness, and so forth. So that's what we do around our advisory work. The second area of Regenibus is around convening. So we believe that building a purpose-driven, sustainable-centric community within the cannabis industry with ancillary companies and Fortune 500 companies, because as you all know, they're all either involved or many of them are involved or are looking very, very carefully at this industry as it evolves towards, particularly in the U.S., better legalization. So we convened to our Regenibus membership network, which we fully revamped, and we just relaunched the new RMN. And then the second way we do this is through the Regenerative Cannabis Live, which is our event that we have been putting on at the United Nations. We had our inaugural event in May at the UN in New York. I'll be happy to talk a little bit more about that. And then the third area of Regenibus is our separate entity, which is Regenibus Ventures. And Regenibus Ventures will be a series of impact funds that are designed and aligned to ESG and that support cannabis companies that have a commitment to ESG, because usually they're startups and scale-ups. So we'll be able to deploy capital into those companies and then become a strategic ESG advisor to those companies. So we expect those companies to become the next leading sustainable ESG companies in the future. So that's the three areas of what we do at Regenibus.
That's fantastic. And I think the cannabis consumer is probably primed to purchase and engage with these responsible corporate entities far more than, you know, a traditional consumer might be. So I think there's a real advantage given to ESG conscious cannabis companies in using that as, you know, a business development or almost a marketing play for them beyond just the, you know, the core, let's say, values that ESG represents. So I think there's a...
Absolutely. I think it's a great point. And one of the other points that people, you know, in the industry, we're not the only people that are talking about ESG. I think everybody's talking about ESG now, or in some form or another. I think it's really important to remember that this industry is in dire need of funding, and the federal situation is really hampering that progress and unlocking the doors to securing funding. We all know that there are huge amounts of funds waiting in the wings to invest in the cannabis industry, particularly companies that are ESG, that have an ESG strategy and position. So these companies, these investment organizations, particularly impact investors, can get a take a look under the hood of these companies and look at the data around their companies, around their ESG data. And that'll really give an insight into an investor group to say, well, look, this company is doing great work around their, you know, their energy management, their GHG emissions, the waste and hazardous materials management, around our employee health and safety, and so forth, some of the data points that are within ESG. And that's going to open up the opportunity for securing funding. But it's we're at the very, very start of the ESG in the cannabis industry. There's only, I believe, around 10 ESG reports anywhere globally, for 10 ESG reports. I'd say about 3 of those ESG reports are actual ESG reports. Others are more CSR reports, corporate social responsibility, and others are baked into sort of the larger financial reports. So we're just getting started. But I think the industry has the opportunity to get this right from the get-go. And then, of course, it's not just about building a long-term, successful, sustainable industry, but it's, you know, for the publicly listed companies, the SEC are going to come down very, very hard on all publicly listed companies, including cannabis companies, and particularly with a focus on the environmental side. And if a company's not got their environmental data in order and aligned to a specific framework like SASB or GRI, for example, they're going to start getting some serious fines. So there's a multitude of reasons why the cannabis industry really needs to step up and starts to really implementing their ESG programs and investing in it, bringing in their ESG practitioners, getting their reporting right, which is critical too. And then from there, the world's, the industry's oyster at that stage.
You know, there rarely is an industry that fits so well with the ESG principles. And I think, as you point out, cannabis is that. We've both commented far and wide about that particular topic. But there's a number of reasons why companies should and do follow those principles. Number one, doing the right thing, of course. That goes without saying, but not everybody's head is there. You talk about the second, which is, you know, funding. Increasingly, investors look very closely at ESG compliance and the like. But the third is really consumer behavior, and it's dictated by consumer behavior. And I had the pleasure of being on a panel with our friend and your partner, Mr. Trotter, recently, and we talked about the hemp industry and hemp products in particular, and whether hemp consumers are sophisticated enough or perhaps in tune enough with these principles to dictate how companies behave in this space. And that's in part due to the fragmented nature of the products that come from the hemp industry, whether it's CBD or whether it's smokable hemp flower or whether it's, you know, the newfound intoxicating hemp compounds juxtaposed against industrial uses, fuels, plastics, and the like. Can you comment on consumer behavior and how it will impact the cannabis industry by and through these ESG principles?
Yeah, it's a great point, and that's one of the most critical parts to the jigsaw of building a sustainable industry. I mean, there's before I moved to the cannabis industry, there's a massive change. Consumer is changing their behaviors and demanding that companies, no matter the industry, are putting forward more sustainable products and services. And, you know, 85% of consumers have shifted towards sustainable purchasing behavior in the past 5 years. 85%, and we're going to start to see that in the cannabis industry too. Again, it's a nascent industry. We're just getting started to a certain degree, of course. But I think you know, and it, but at the same time, it's also up to the companies to be putting more sustainable products out there. The packaging products that are healthy, for example, for people's health and wellness. And consumers are, you know, particularly Gen Z, are going to be voting with their dollars, and they're going to be supporting cannabis companies that are focused on being purpose-driven companies that are doing good. It's very, very simple. If you look at Coca-Cola, their product is, you know, we won't go into but the product is not a healthy product, right? Their plastics are all over the oceans, everywhere. If Coca-Cola were to shift their packaging to biodegradable and hemp-based plastics, that would be a game changer for the company. And I would suspect that more consumers would support Coca-Cola for that. But I think there's a long way to go, and there's a great opportunity for companies like Wild, for example, WYLD, who are, their packaging is now all around biodegradable packaging. It's the first ever in the cannabis industry, and actually in any industry, to have biodegradable packaging. So they're leading the way, and it's a great opportunity for the cannabis industry to show other industries of how it should be done. And that's going to get the support of consumers who are really changing their attitudes. So it was a great point, Bob.
Yeah, and I think Bob and I are both fans of Wild, so shout out to that group, although they are not a sponsor, I do want to mention. no, and so I think that's actually a great pivot to some of the other work that you're doing in cannabis, because it's not all just ESG-focused, as I understand it. I saw, then, doing a little research in the back end, that you were involved with a company that purports to be deploying CBD products into Hong Kong. So how does that kind of play into some of the ESG work that you're doing? And then what is your involvement in the international cannabis space? How does that play into kind of what you're doing on the ESG side here in the US?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Well, I suppose just to put a pause on Hong Kong, because Hong Kong, the authorities have completely done they've clamped down on anything to do with CBD. So actually the market has completely evaporated in the last few months. We won't go into the reasons for it, but you know, if you look over not so far away, look to Thailand, and we're seeing a huge progress around medical and recreational. That's the industry, the market to be focused on. I know some of the market leaders that were in Hong Kong found, for example, and they've had to pull all of their products, like every other company and CBD brand that was in Hong Kong. It's quite sad, actually. It's actually very, very sad what happened in Hong Kong. So that's Hong Kong. I've also been very involved in Colombia. That was actually where I first started my work in the cannabis industry, working with some of the not so much around sustainability, because when I moved into it five and a half years ago into the industry, I was hoping that we could talk more about sustainability. But it was not ready. The industry was not ready for it. So I did some other work with some of the Canadian LPs. It seems like a lifetime ago now at this stage, but spent a lot of time in Colombia, and I think Colombia missed its first mover advantage, but I think it's now starting to resurrect itself with some of the new progressiveness that's coming from the new president there, Petro. But as I mentioned, Thailand is definitely moving forward. And what's very interesting there is we've been in touch with the Prince and the Thai government around the work that we're doing at Regenerative Cannabis Live at the United Nations. And I think they're very keen to talk about the social impact that with their own programs within Thailand, and the economic impact that's going to bring to the country too, and not just in Thailand, but further afield around Asia, where we're starting to see ripple effects. So I think the work that we're doing at with the United Nations is starting to, it's a part of the educational process of really helping to not just educate, but also excite and inspire governments to really think long and hard about, we really should be regulating cannabis in all of its forms, medical, adult use, industrial, because it's a significant game changer. And when we look at countries like my own country, Ireland, we're very, very, very far behind, which is also quite sad to see. But I hope now with some of the progressiveness that's coming from some people in the Irish scene, should we say, there should be some good movement there pretty soon.
Yeah, no, we work with, we've got some colleagues in Ireland, and we're excited at some of the potential movement and the horizons in the future and the development of cannabinoid products in Ireland and then across the EU.
Let alone the basis to be a corporate bastion for a 12% flat tax and all these other great products and solvency protection. Yeah. Otherwise, we don't talk nearly enough about Ireland for those purposes.
We don't.
Yeah. Well, that's another huge attraction. Obviously, all of the Googles and the big tech companies and pharma companies have all set up their EMEA headquarters there and global headquarters in Ireland which has been a significant driver for economic prosperity in Ireland over the last, I think it's 15, 20 years for that, even that tax alone. So it's been very, a great driver. Good point, Bob.
Yeah, and I think, you know, your prior experience in the ESG space and then the fact that you have this international component to your background as well has really lent to your credibility, and I think speaks to the success that we've seen with events like Regenibus Live and the work that you're doing with Regenibus on the global scale. So I think that all kind of came together very nicely for you, and it's a perfect time and place for you in the cannabis industry. Well, Patrick, really appreciate you joining us today. You know, I think you left us with some good thoughts and some good topics to think about as we head off into the evening here. Just wanted to shout out briefly our lovely producer behind the scenes, Halston Trabuco. She's the one that puts all the work in to producing these episodes and getting them out the door, and she does not get enough recognition for the hard work that she does. So just wanted to say thank you, Halston, and thank you to all the listeners for joining us for another episode. Till next time.
Thanks for joining us for another enlightening conversation. If you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button to get all future episodes fresh out of the studio. Suggestions for topics or guests for the show, please send them to hello@bobhoban.com. And, as always, thanks to Benzinga for powering the Hoban Minute.